So this is Dora Smith with Siemens PLM Software, and I'm here with President and CEO Chuck Grindstaff for a chat with Chuck. How are you, Chuck?
Doing well, Dora. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So we haven't had one of these in a while, so let's kind of recap what's happened in 2013. A lot of different announcements, product announcements, industry announcements.
Sure.
You know, are there a couple that you want to talk about in particular, or we kind of go through all the big ones that we've had?
Well, you know, I guess I really would like to highlight a few of the great things that we've been doing around the products. Obviously, we've got several really marquee releases out, but maybe the most exciting thing is the Catalyst series. What we're doing there with Catalyst is really trying to take all of the engineering knowledge we have, industry knowledge we have, and layer those things on our core products to really help our customers get going more quickly. Kind of plays off against what we've done with TeamCenter Rapid Start, which is another innovation to bring people up to an operating level with TeamCenter very quickly. But layering on top of that the Catalyst, then they get the semantics of the industry, core workflows, the data model, all ready to go for our key target customers. So real exciting. We just went through our GST where we were able to walk with the entire sales force and service force. Meaning of the Catalyst, how they work, how they can really add value to customers quickly. So all in all, a very exciting innovation there.
Yeah, there was a lot of energy at the global sales training.
Yeah, there really was. You know, that it's not often that we're able to really pull so many people together, and we do the global sales training, this GST, every 2 years now, but very heavily attended, some real exciting activities, and really perhaps the first one that we've really done entire operation around our industry focus. So able to really walk across all the target industries, look at the value propositions, compare and contrast what where we are compared to the competition, really show a lot of big differentiation. So I think people really appreciated it. At least the feedback I got throughout the sessions and afterwards was very excellent material. The entire team, the industry's team, the product teams, marketing team all got together, really pulled off a great event.
That's good. So you covered quite a bit of the announcements. One other one that stuck out to me, just I think to reemphasize our openness, was that we still continue to have competitors or would-be competitors in the future continue to invest in our components technology. That's great.
You might be thinking of Belmont,
yeah.
Very good one. This is the team that originally founded the SolidWorks product. They obviously moved on from Dassault and have formed a new company, Belmont. We've partnered up with them in the sense of licensing our Parasolid and DCube tools. And we're excited by this. It's always been our idea here to provide the greater value of interoperability and that possibility in our competitors' products over and above the sort of smaller thinking of a competitive interest. We think and we know around the world that Parasolid is the defining set of geometric modeling tools that drives all of our core products and is built into hundreds of products around the world, our customers and also our competitors. And we're happy to see Belmont launch a new initiative. They've got some innovative ideas, and the fact that they're using our tools really does set us up for interoperation with those tools as they come to market. So we're excited by it. It's good to see a repeat customer, too. Every entrepreneur has a choice to build their own, make, or to buy from alternatives. And, these are very knowledgeable and well-schooled individuals on what it takes to be a successful enterprise. And, it's good to see them back as partners.
Good. So covered a few things from 2013. Mm-hmm. Looking at some of the R&D focus areas from 2013 and headed into 14, one of the things I've heard you talk about recently is how product complexity continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see if you could just kind of recapture where are we focused at from an R&D to kind of combat how complex the products are getting.
Well, complexity, it kind of creeps into the way people develop their products in two ways. One is increasing degree of variety. Customers expect products to almost be personalized to their unique needs and desires. And that variety adds complexity. But the other dimension to it is the integration, the collapsing of what used to be disparate technologies into an integrated whole. And both of those are pushing very hard on product development teams and manufacturing and quality. Now, in the area of converging technologies, if you go to the the auto showroom these days and look at what electronically and software and mechanically is put together in a vehicle, it's really remarkable compared to where it was even 5 years ago. Integrated systems, the kind of sensors and warning and safety elements are really at the forefront of the differentiating features for a vehicle. And for an engineering group amongst all their peers to stand out, they need to be able to harness that complexity very quickly. They need to be able to innovate, to add new features and functions, but at the same time make sure that those are fully integrated into a completely safe and fun to drive and a great customer experience vehicle. And whether it's automotive or aerospace or consumer electronics or machines, the same convergence is happening quite quickly. So, those trends are the sort of things that a department or an entity needs to take into account themselves and then across the supply chain. To do that, they need a lot of real good, solid support in the core tools. You know, we've obviously done a lot to help people bring disparate data together with our synchronous technology we've talked about for mm-hmm. several years now. But what we've done on the assembly side is very analogous to synchronous technology, our new 4GD, our fourth generation design. And what this is allowing product structure to be dealt with in that same sort of ad hoc fashion to partition and manage the context for interaction really on the fly, not having to pre-author product structure or product structure fragments for a particular design job, but to, in a very late-bound, I know it's kind of a computer science-y concept, but a late-bound approach with high performance, all of the components, all of the design artifacts, all the requirements, all of the elements that make up that multidisciplinary object, and bring them to bear onto the desktop for a decision to be made, knowing that you've got the right revision levels, the right security levels, all integrated together. 4GD is a real breakthrough in that sense of performance and scale. That sits at the foundation for a lot of the application work that we're doing. Obviously, we're almost a year now into the LMS acquisition, and we talked about that, I think, on the last mm-hmm. one we did quite a while ago, I guess, but we talked about our systems-driven product development strategy. And what that is the engineering applications that sit on top of this very dynamic product structure management mechanism to allow our customers to answer questions about a fully multidisciplinary system, subsystem, or complete system of systems. This sort of analysis and modeling, whether it's the model-driven design that starts in the one-dimensional area, sort of math models that we move forward, or further down in the process where there's more design detail and artifacts, that full flow of information is really coming together. LMS team is doing great, not only in their traditional space, but in the integrated strategy of this systems-driven product development. We're excited by it. Our customers are getting a lot of immediate value of what we've done so far, but they also, I think, appreciate the vision, where it's headed. It's exciting stuff. And then, of course, the key thing is how do you deliver that sophistication in a way which people find fun and really intuitive to interact with. And our active workspace is really the core of the strategy for the next generation of user interaction. That's already in the market now. I think when we talked last, we were just bringing version 2.0 out. We've got really great feedback from not only the early adopters of the active workspace user interface to our entire products, but really a lot of traction with prospects and with even existing customers that have deployed our existing rich client technology. They really see, I think, the same thing we do, that the flatter UI, fewer amounts of interactive levels to go through to get to the data really makes a lot of sense. Whether they use a search paradigm around metadata, or search around proximity, a search around other added value data items, they can really combine those together on the fly, do that in a very easy to deploy model. You know, Active Workspace doesn't have any IT infrastructure required on the client side. It's all served up from the server, so this makes it very inexpensive to deploy, but at the same time, very, very powerful. Of course, we've hooked Active Workspace into NX, and we have the ability to embed Active Workspace in any of the applications that we're delivering, and at the same time to aggregate together applications, not only our own, but others. So those three things together make for a lot of really great deliveries in the year.
A lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's exciting work. It's in some ways bringing all of the pieces of PLM together that really kind of keep us excited about the future.
Okay, good. So it sounds like we'll be busy into 2014.
We sure will.
You know, something else that you've been talking about recently is capturing the science of the product.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could just, you know, there's a number of folks probably that'll watch this that haven't heard you speak about that subject. What does that really mean? What are we trying to do?
Well, what I'm talking about there is, you know, there are many different dimensions to what a product is. You know, if you're a retailer, you think of a product as a product that you buy and resell. So you have a SKU and you have a supply chain that delivers that product. And you worry about the marketing and making sure that it's available and attractive to people to buy. But how that product really works, how that product delivers the value to a customer is not necessarily something that retail value chain around a product really is capturing. Our big focus is on the nature of what makes a product operate. How does it operate efficiently, safely? Does it do so in a cost-effective manner? The real, you know, sometimes I talk about the DNA. Where what we feel that we've reached is a level of understanding of the interplay of the engineering disciplines, the connection of those engineering disciplines all the way through manufacturing, in such a way that I liken it to mapping the genome that, you know, was accomplished in the case of the humans about 10 years ago now.
Right.
But we're just now getting to the point where designer drugs that are focused on particular ailments that might be expressed in the genome are now possible and beginning to make their way into the healthcare system. In the same sort of way, what we've done over the years to understand the science of the product, that is the engineering core, has led us to a point where we have now, I think, a complete map of what needs to be done, how it needs to be done, what kind of scale needs to be accomplished to cover this multidisciplinary view of really in any size or complexity product. And now having that core knowledge, that core science behind us, we have the focus on the applications, things like the catalyst that we talked about, things like applications around a particular industry like shipbuilding or automotive or aerospace. So those applications now can become, on top of that foundational knowledge, just ever so much more specific and value-rich to our customers. So it's really about kind of differentiating the sort of commercial side from the science side. And that's where I think we really have our sights set over the long haul. The acquisition of LMS is clearly aligned with that understanding and vision. And if you looked at our other acquisitions, things like Perfect Costing, you know, that might sound more transactional, but, you know, when you think about it, really making a product, the cost side and predicting that cost side is very critical to an engineering decision process. And so we want to make sure that the commercial side is integrated into that discovery and engineering process at the same time, you know, sort of across that, what I call the analytics bus. You're not just answering commercial questions, you're answering product performance questions, product safety questions, product manufacturability questions, really the whole design for in an integrated backbone. So
each piece of those a chromosome in the
yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
Okay, good. You know, one of the other things I wanted us to talk about is over the last year there's been a lot of activity in the academic area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were at one of the events. We had our largest software grant to date.
Yeah, Maryland, yeah,
to University of Maryland. We've had, I think, over 600 new grants this year. We've been giving out new resources to the schools, new parts catalog access, new learning resources, a ton of downloads of our student software, the free student software that
we
give away.
Yeah, I think we're up to 100,000 this year, yeah.
So a lot of activity there, and I guess I just wanted you to comment on the focus on academic and, you know, how important you feel it is to where things are headed, because you've also been talking a lot about the future of PLM and manufacturing.
Right.
So I just want to get your thoughts.
Well, you know, our thought here is, you know, the engineering institutions that we engage with, you know, clearly they have all the theory that they need in order to teach students. I mean, this is a lot of these things are well-known techniques and processes around sort of existing materials and how those perform and how those can be integrated into a integrated controls-driven or system that integrates controls and sensors. And like, this is all pretty well understood engineering. What we felt is, and what we feel, is that in order to actualize a lot of that theory, that students really have to be able to use the tools that they're going to encounter in industry. And in many cases, we can assist in the teaching of the theory with the tools, but at the same time, enable students with an experience about, well, how do you deal with this complex variety? How do you deal with the fact that it's not just one instance of a, maybe a car you put in a solar challenge, but it's a whole range of configurations of a vehicle, and dealing with those alternatives and the degree to which we go through the analysis and validation and verification of the configuration possibilities of things you can only really accomplish with tools like ours. And of course, having the students understand the CAD products in X, Solid Edge, making sure that they know what's possible and what's easy and what's where they can branch out and really innovate is critical. Our customers are very anxious to bring on engineering talent and bring on engineering talent that really understands the practical side of things as well as the theoretical side. And so by engaging with the universities, we feel like we can help bridge that gap. We can do the right thing for the next generation of really leaders and innovators. And by the same token, we can do the right thing for our customers, making sure that people that they are and the institutions are drawing from are really coming out with the right kind of skills. So it's exciting for us. We're happy to donate software, but it's not just throwing software over the fence as well. I have a very strong view that we as an organization need to stay engaged with these universities and help them with the curriculum development, help them with the execution of the next generation of engineering education. So it's exciting. It's worth it. It's rewarding to see the students use our tools and gaining understanding of engineering. And it's also exciting to see them then take that into their future careers.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I'm in Cincinnati. We'll be announcing in the near future, but it's a grant that was driven by a customer asking a community college
same
to,
kind of thing, yeah.
So it's really great to see when they all work together. So.
Yeah.
So just let's see, two last topics. Let's talk about any comments you have really around, you addressed it a little bit earlier, but just the future of PLM in manufacturing. How do you see the industry changing?
Well, if you look around the world these days, you'll see there's a resurgence of understanding in the importance of manufacturing to economic well-being. Whether it's in the U.S., obviously there's quite a lot of energy around reshoring. Why would that be the case? It's not because, American labor is cheaper than labor that might exist in other areas of the world, but it's because a lot of companies are realizing that together with automation in the manufacturing process itself, combined together with design for that more advanced manufacturing process, that entire chain can be done in such a way that costs are really reduced and products can be made in a very effective fashion. Now, there's a toy manufacturer, for example, that is reshoring a lot of their work. And what they saw is, well, some of the things that they might have used hand assembly for in the past, if they just tweak their design a small amount, they can then use the fully automated assembly and automated manufacturing techniques to get the cost down even less than what they were doing in an Asian offshore operation. And logistics is obviously something to take into account, shipping costs. But this whole trend towards designing for the automated factory and designing for the ultimate manufacturing process is really reaching a high degree of sophistication. So whether it's the U.S. with that kind of event strategy, whether it's Industry 4.0 in Germany, where they're talking about really the next generation of automation in factories, they talk about self-organizing elements of the factory where, just like hopefully, when you get five people in a room and you set a task and for them to achieve, they begin to organize themselves into various disciplines to go after and achieve that task. We want to work to the future where there's self-organizing elements of automation that when they're put together and given a higher level task, they can really broadcast or in effect publish what they're capable of doing that can orchestrate collaboration with other elements in the factory in perhaps a sort of less pre-structured fashion. Kind of like what I was talking about with fourth generation design, where you're doing it, in fact, on the fly downstream as opposed to pre-configuring. And you know, if you go to China, you see the same thing. Japan, really, the reason for this is that the amount of the economic value add from manufacturing is significant. You know, I mean, it's 16-17% around if you sort of look at statistics. But underneath that, massive amounts of engineering, massive amounts of innovation are really, and massive amounts of the peripheral economies are driven from that core manufacturing and product design engine. And in fact, you know, if you look at the statistics, you'd see that all successful economies really do have a thriving, what I call manufacturing sector. And I don't mean just making the parts; it's the whole design through manufacturing chain. When I talk about this, and when you combine all this together, when you get the flow of innovation through the functional design, through the safety, and through the complexity that we need to deliver the final product all the way through manufacturing, then you can be in a very important part of the future of the country or the region or the world. And we're excited to have our tools really as a key component in not only revitalizing various markets around the world, but in really working our way through the next generation of design and manufacturing capabilities. So it's an exciting time. We're at a great point in technology completion and sophistication, but also at a point where I think a lot of companies are ready for the process change to take advantage of it.
That's great. Now, I know you meet with a lot of customers through the year and go to a lot of user group events around the globe, participate in some of our industry special interest groups. I don't know if you can pick out one customer that you want to highlight, but just tell me an interesting customer interaction or one you're particularly proud of how they use our software this year.
I don't know if I'd want to pick out one, but I would say that, yeah, you're right. I am a lot with users, either at our users group meetings. You know, we have PLM connections that are held around the world in China and Japan and Russia and Europe and the U.S. And they're all, what I sense this year is very, very focused and very upbeat and very excited about what they're able to do with the technology and where the next steps are. A very vibrant community this year. You know, if you go back to 2009 when the economy was kind of sputtering, you had a different feel. Now the growth and the expansion is clearly evident. A lot of customer presentations about how they're using technology at these PLM Connections events. So all in all, I think those are great. I also spent some time with special industry engagements. We have our automotive one that this year was held in Japan. You know, this brings together automotive OEMs from around the world, and there we can really address problems of mutual interest. Might be things like long-term data retention or supply chain interaction or things that are not proprietary to a particular OEM, but good for the entire industry. And there again, I think, you know, it's just really exciting to see companies that are able to find a degree of common interest, even if there's, you know, really tough competitors, an area of common interest that will make the whole industry better. We can engage with our technology to assist them in solving a particular kind of collaboration problem, for example, and then, you know, go from there to then a specific engagement with the customers. It was nice to see ULA launch their latest Atlas V rocket. I think that's on the MAVEN project, heading for another mission to Mars, and that's very cool. You know, it's with ULA, obviously they did the lift capability on the current Mars rover project, right?
And right.
So it's great to have, you know, companies like this that are able to really show time and time again their ability to deliver excellence. And you know, with somebody like ULA, we're just proud to be part of, you know, their engineering process. And it's the same with all the other companies. I really hate, shouldn't single out one, but I do think it's cool. You know, rockets are cool.
All right, great, Chuck. Well, we will try to catch you a few more times in 2014 than we did this year.
Okay, Dora. Well,
thank you.
Well, thanks.